Everything I'm saying is
good. Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your scariest site of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Don't respond to shit. We're on. I'm like, you tripping. Go get it. They dropping locations. I'm getting it done. Tweeting, we sliding. The feds come. You're listening to Aha from Lil Durk. 7220 is the most recent album in Durk's oeuvre, and also a chart topper. Durk has been putting out records for a decade now, part of the foundational 1.0 wave of Chicago artists at the beginning of the drill movement back, this feels like 100 years ago at this point. Durk has had a tremendous amount of longevity, not insignificant amount of quote-unquote crossover success, and remains something of a viable hitmaker all these years later. We're going to talk today. We're really living in, it's a full decade of drill at this point. We're starting in Chicago, working obviously through the UK, but then back to New York, Brooklyn and the Bronx specifically. So today we're going to talk a little bit about some drill touchstones. We're going to talk about early Chicago. We're also going to talk about the current movement in Brooklyn and the Bronx. You know that there's no conversation about Chicago drill without David Drake, author of the original Chief Keef's in His Grandma's Basement Gawker story, which is literally 10 years and a month old right now. David is checking in with us. Are you in Chicago right now, David?
I am in Chicago, actually, yeah.
And we had briefly, when the camera was on, we saw you were wearing the Fredo Santana shirt.
It was a Joe Fresh Goods and Andrew Barber collaboration, I believe, from before Joe was a big...
Yeah, I was going to say, from Fredo Santana to New Balance, Joe Fresh Goods. Yeah. Big art. So David, of course, has been chronicling Chicago drill for many, many, many years. So David's going to give us a little bit of historical perspective and also talk about the arc of Durk's career. Also, of course, Joe Coscarelli is here. Hey, Boo.
Hey, man. Happy to be back.
Joe wrote about Fabio Foreign recently, obviously Fabio carrying the mantle. I don't know which part of that phrase should be in quote marks, but some of it should be in quote marks for Brooklyn drill after the passing of Pop Smoke. I think his most recent album underscores some of the challenges facing Brooklyn drill or New York drill more broadly in this moment. So we'll talk in the back half of the episode about what's going on in New York with Fabio and also in the Bronx, K-Flock, B-Love, et cetera, et cetera. Let's start, though, by going back and talking about Durk's current success. David, when you think back to 2012, Keef, Reese, Durk, and more, who at that time seemed to you to be most primed for longevity and influence?
I would say that Keef just seemed obviously like a huge star. And for the sort of standards of the time, I feel like, and he kind of remains like in some ways the most versatile in terms of like the breadth of styles and creativity and all that kind of stuff. And I assume this is where you're going with it. I don't think that there were definitely people that thought that Durk also had what it took. And he was certainly, I feel like he was probably top two, top three, depending on how strongly you felt about Louis at the time, who, of course, was like before both of them. But Durk was always in competition, for sure.
And Durk signed to Def Jam, like right then, like in 2012 or 2013, right? Durk and Reese both signed to Def Jam.
Yep, to Sycamore, actually, who, you know, signed Travis.
Can you tell us a little bit about, for folks who may not be totally versed in kind of drill as a sound or ideology, can you explain a little bit about what was happening with the Sonics in Chicago in 2011, 2012, that really birthed what has become its own branch, or almost a whole new tree, hip-hop-wise? What was changing that was so radical about the Sonic style at that point?
I think, obviously, a lot of people pointed out that there were similarities to Atlanta and the Brick Squad stuff from Atlanta at the time. And Gucci was easily outside of the South. The biggest city for Gucci was Chicago, from everything that I've heard from radio DJs and all that. And I do think, though, that Chicago is also such a huge, I mean, it's the third largest city in the country. There were a breadth of new producers that really this small community, because Durk and Keef and Louis, all those guys were not, like, they were a few blocks away from each other. So on one level, it was a small community that had found had created a kind of movement with some local producers who were doing sort of their own variations musically. And the way that Louis described it at the time to me was it's a gumbo. So although, yeah, there was obviously this influence from Atlanta, there was also a big influence from Memphis, a big influence from like Dipset and G-Unit era New York, big influence from New Orleans also, like Cash Money, No Limit stuff was big. And there was always like a kind of unique sensibility to it, I think, is a little elusive to describe. But I do think that there was sort of an evolution of what had been happening in what was then called trap music.
Yeah, and it's interesting to just even mentioning Memphis. I've always felt like that kind of the particular, let's call it, vibration of like pugnacity in the production in early drill really did feel perhaps even more indebted to Memphis on some level than to Atlanta. There was always like a cleanliness and a brightness to some of the Atlanta stuff that I don't think survived in the translation to 2012 drill.
It was a little darker. I think Andrew Barber had unearthed that Love Sosa Flow actually came out of a Lord Infamous track. Like an Lord Infamous album track is where the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da comes from.
Interesting. So
I think that a lot of that sound was like, and Chicago, of course, is like from the going back to the Great Migration, is a lot of people that came from the South in a way that sort of makes it a different population than New York. The evolution of music and everything, a lot of it comes up from Mississippi and from New Orleans and those kinds of places.
Just as a sidebar, obviously, hello to Andrew, who I've got to assume is going to listen. Shout out Fake Shore Drive. Always very important resource for everything happening in Chicago, whether it's drill or Kanye or Chance or any of the above. So shout out Andrew always. I want to jump ahead and then we'll go backwards after this. But you had said something on Twitter a week or two ago that really struck me as it's a taxonomical conundrum, but it's a little bit more than that. When you listen to the new Lil Durk album, when I listen to the new Lil Durk album, I don't necessarily hear drill as I think it has iterated over the last 10 years in terms of production styles, center of gravity. I feel like it's maybe a little bit more centrist, a little bit more big umbrella. But you said something to the effect of like, Lil Durk is a founder of drill. Like, why wouldn't this be drill? Or why would we not call this drill? Am I categorizing what you're saying?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And I'm not too pressed one way or the other, but I'm curious, like, when you listen to this most recent album, what is it that you're hearing on it outside of Durk's vocal style, vocal processing, etc.? What are you hearing other things that feel clearly 10 years ago indebted?
Well, I guess to me, one thing is just that I don't think that his sound has actually shifted that much. Like Durk today doesn't sound, it sounds maybe a little bit more like compositionally, the stuff feels like it takes up a little more space, but I would ascribe that more to just his experience as a songwriter rather than like some sort of shifting regional aesthetic thing. There are Southern producers, of course, Atlanta producers on his project, but there's also like Chase Davis is on it. Chase Davis is the one that produced Lil Mouse, Get Smoked. There's still Chicago guys doing his records. No Auto Durk, which is one of the big comeback records, was produced by DJ Milticket, who's a Chicago guy that had also produced, that beat was originally G Herbo's. And like a lot of those records in the second half of Durk's career still feel to me pretty Chicago. I'd say actually the biggest thing that makes me think of them as like ascribe them the qualities of drill would be sort of conceptually.
Before you go in on that, Joe, I actually was wondering, like when you talked to Fabio, did you talk to him at all about his conception of drill? And if so, was it historically minded in the sense, like when I talked to Pop before he passed, Pop was very clear about listening specifically to UK drill and borrowing from UK drill. He didn't really talk very much about Chicago specifically. But I wonder, when you talk to Fabio, when he talked about his relationship to genre, was he talking about history or was he talking about just being in Pop's wake?
I think it's interesting the way that these sounds have traveled geographically, right? Like Pop Smoke may have been into UK drill artists, but I think more what those guys got into was typing drill beat into YouTube and then accidentally finding a producer from the UK. Like I think when they first started using these beats, they were just it was an SEO exercise, right? You have these bedroom producers in the UK or wherever else trying to make beats that sound like a Chief Keef beat or a Lil Durk beat or a G Herbo beat or whatever, putting those names into the subject line, the top line of their YouTube video, type beat culture. And then these New York guys are happening upon them and maybe not realizing in real time that what's happening is kids in the UK are taking the grime and the dance music they grew up on in and adding that little flavor to trying to mimic beats from Chicago that were trying to mimic beats from Atlanta and Memphis. So you have all these interpretations, right? And I think the gumbo thing that David touched on continues to be like a great metaphor for how all this works. Fabio was definitely listening to Chief Keef in 2012. I think everybody who was into rap music of the
hip-hop,
moment,
yeah,
was
in general, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think his actual turn towards drill comes more from Bobby Shmurda and Rowdy Rebel, who he grew up with in East Flatbush. And when they come out with Hot Boy in, what was it, 2014, 2015?
14 or 15, yeah.
What those guys are doing is their version of a Chicago video, right? And they're sort of updating the New York sound with that. And so it's been passed along. It's like, you know, it's this game of telephone, right? And these beats and these flows, maybe they don't know exactly where they started. Like a lot of people probably doing the Love Sosa flow don't know where it started, but they know where they heard it. And everybody either takes or leaves a piece in each line of this daisy chain.
To add one more sidebar to like the internet-driven decontextualization of the sound, a record that I like a lot that almost nobody else seems to like is CJ's Whoopty, which is obviously, you know, is it fake? Is it's industry?
David and I have thought about this in the DMs maybe like 8 months ago, maybe 2 years ago at this point. Who took what side?
David, I reread all of our DMs and they are literally all about Chief Keef, like dating back like 8 years. But like, wait, who took what side in the Whoopty debate?
Unsurprisingly, let's say David Drake does not like Whoopty. Is that correct?
I feel like, first off, the sample and that is amazing. It's what carries the song. It's an incredible sample. And the artist that actually broke that sample was a guy from Chicago who's sort of Durk affiliated, Mimo 600. And Mimo had a really buzzing street record with it. And then King Von, when he was on the way up, jumped on it. And then they released a second video with the two of them. And then suddenly there was a whole, you know, there's a street thing happening in Chicago and their ops started recorded over that beat. And that actually had more streams. I think Duck was on it, or maybe it was Ruga, but that version of it had more streams even than the Vaughn and Mimo version. And then people started knocking it off from all over Chicago. And then I started to see it in New York, and CJ or his team or whoever signed him was smart enough to clear the sample, and maybe the beat felt like a little bit more like a New York version of it.
Well, the reason I brought it up is because speaking of the internet, the person who produced it, I think it was a pure type beat. The guy lives in Cyprus, like in the Mediterranean, you know, like he doesn't live in New York. He doesn't live in Staten Island or Canarsie or the Bronx.
Or even London.
Or even London, right. Look, at this point, Ghanaian drill, Italian drill, Polish, it's universal at this point. But this guy literally just lived on an island and I think they found it on YouTube. What seemed to me like a completely credible New York drill beat that basically gave CJ, I would say gave him a career, but it didn't really, because CJ is now, I don't know where CJ is, but he's not.
Right, he's a missing person. He's on a milk carton somewhere.
I mean, the sample is, I think, a Bollywood sample, and it's an incredible, great vocal sample.
But David, you're saying that the sample obviously predates Whoopty.
Yeah, and it had this sort of buzzing life it was like a record that everybody kind of rocked over, like in the tradition of classic New York beats that you'd hear, like that Milkbone beat or whatever, like where like a bunch of different rappers kind of, you know, try different freestyles and versions, and yeah.
Have you on the SS Soldier, man? Loyalty over royalty, I know the vibes.
Whoop it, tell my side it's a movie. Blue T cheese. I swear I'm addicted to blue cheese. I gotta stick to this paper like loose leaf. I'm by my chicken like it's a two-piece. You can have your back to your groupie. She just got all my kids in a two-seat.
I mean, I think we're getting into a little bit into the weeds on this, but it also speaks to a larger point of, I think, why drill is working on so many levels in so many cities, in so many scenes. Like, we just named half a dozen artists with 2 dozen beefs among all of them, 3 different versions of the same beat with the same sample, like some people using the same flow, some people changing the bass line. Like, it's this infinitely like tweakable thing.
Memeable.
Yes, that starts, and it starts from a simple, super specific, super local place, and then it's echoed and copied and ripped off and tweaked and morphs, right? Until it bubbles its way up to whatever mainstream executive or radio programmer or whatever. And we've seen this over and over again in the scene. And I think, like, for someone like you, David, who pays such close attention to it, it can be frustrating that people aren't paying proper historical homage to the lineage or whatever it may be. But it also works on each of these levels. Like, no matter what kind of music fan you want to be, you can like tap in at one of these levels and it can be satisfying.
I basically agree. I think that the thing that I get frustrated with, though, more directly than like people not knowing the history or not knowing what underground street rapper did what, is that I do think that there is in the middle of the country and on the coasts and in London, a sort of different approach to even what the concept of drill is. The sound, the rhythm style that became big in New York and then also jumped to London and then got flipped around by London comes from one very specific record, which is G Herbo and Lil Baby's Kill record, which was produced by DJ L and has a very specific like snare pattern that got re-rocked a bunch of times.
Let's listen to a minute of Kill. Let's listen to it just to get a sense of the table setting. No short shooter zoning off the court, shooter off his porch, turn it to a corpse. Yeah, I'm about that, rolling up that loud pack, catch me lacking, I doubt that, cause I never leave without that, and that's real shit. Got real hitters, they kill shit. You f*** around, hit the kill switch. These hollow. Let's build on that a little bit more, because that suggests, in the same way that we listen to drag rap and understand an entire lineage of New Orleans type music, and everything is directly traceable to one particular thing, and that links it, not just sonically, but ideologically, you're saying that all of what we're talking about, in essence, boils back to this point.
That would be my contention. And I think that is the basic rhythm. And of course, there are like UK drill songs that don't sound like that, but it almost feels like it's their distance from it that makes them interesting. Like, that is the basic rhythm of what became sort of the New York UK drill sound, and people will do slightly different flips of it, but that is in the same way drag rap, and yeah, like you were saying.
It's funny, David, like your argument of what drill is actually aligns with the argument I think Fivio was trying to make to me, which is essentially like, this is a rhythm. Drill is strictly a sound. And I think what we've definitely seen develop over the last 10 years, and we should talk about whether you guys think this is valid or not, is that it has also become tied with content, right? And specifically local gang content, the specifics of lyrics about quote-unquote ops, basically naming people that you're in rivalries with, naming the blocks that you claim and that other people claim in a way that has lent itself, right, to a ton of, you know, unseemly, frankly, online detective work and real life detective work.
Yeah, and politicization.
Exactly.
Criminalization. Right.
So you have this idea of drill as content, right? And I think when we saw New York City's new mayor talking about drill, that's what he's referring to in terms of trying to tie it to a rise in gun crime. Obviously, Chicago has been dealing with this problem of youth violence and gun crime for a very long time, and having it both tied and not tied to rap music. You know, this is an age-old debate, but I think it has been a fine point has been put on it with the rise of drill around the world and trying to tie drill to basically real life violence. So I'm interested to know where you think that argument fits in versus
with the sonic argument.
The drill, the sonic argument and the rhythm.
I would actually push back on it. So my problem, I guess, would be that I don't really think that the rhythm defines a sort of subgenre of drill is sort of how I would put it. There was a Reddit forum called R Chirac. And I remember Doe, who was King Louis's manager and kind of formulated for me for the first time the real sort of cultural ethos of drill as a cultural movement, would tell me, like, he would go on there and see all these guys that, like, the way they were spelling words and stuff, he was like, these people are clearly like European, or but it was all these outsiders basically like luridly watching what was going on in these cities. And I think DJ Academic's channel has gotten a lot of flack also for that.
Like a prurient interest.
Right. And in the violence, and that it in some ways caricatured drill from a really early time, from before. And I mean, my theory with, I think that G Herbo song took off in New York because G Herbo's style is very like New York lineage. Whereas guys like when Keith is, you know, doing Project Pat Flows or something, it doesn't really connect in New York in the same way. To me, the drill that I think of that's happening on a more conceptual level is the stuff that's, it's more broad musically. And I think of it almost as just in the lineage of gangster rap, in the lineage of trap music, in the lineage of drill. And to me, that's what drill is just like, it's just modern street rap is what drill means.
Joe, this is something that I know you and I have talked about separately, but I kind of struggle with a little bit in terms of the politicization and criminalization of drill. It is in actuality, it is a term that has been rewritten, recoded over and over again, run through Google Translate back and forth by participants, run through Google Translate back and forth by observers, by close observers, and by distant observers, to the point where, in the same way as people talking about gangster rap, David, to your point, in, let's say, 1990 or 1992, right, using that phrase, gangster rap, it really feels bereft of meaning at this point. And people use it as this kind of straw man to say, oh, what's happening with gangs is bad. What's happening with young people is bad. What's happening with certain neighborhoods is bad. What's happening with certain communities is bad. But none of it really speaks to the sound and the music, which is why I wanted to talk about it on this episode, because I feel like I want to rescue the idea a little bit from how it's been abused etymologically, if that makes sense.
I think trap remains the most obvious comparison point for this, right? And I would make the argument that trap was the combination of the sound and the subject matter, right? If you're thinking about early Gucci, early Jeezy, early TI, what they were doing was marrying a small stable of producers, as David mentioned, happened in Chicago as well, with a very specific subject matter about the production and sale of drugs, like within a very specific ecosystem. And I think it was the two of those things that made that work. And when you saw trap become this term in dance music and totally divorced from the subject matter of the original stuff, I think you saw a bastardization of the idea of genre in a slightly different way, right? And I think it's interesting that you might make the argument that if you're not rapping about trapping, then you're not making trap music. But if you're not rapping about drilling, can you still be making drill music, right? And I think that's the sort of philosophical conundrum that we've landed on.
David, when you're looking at like Dirk's subject matter on the most recent album, and obviously this is after the murder of King Von, there are tensions that are still like very much alive within the city. When you look at Dirk's subject matter, even though he is now releasing high profile number one albums, how different is it from L's Anthem era?
I mean, on the most recent one, certainly in the lyrics, it's, to me, it's an evolution, but it's not like substantially different. I'm looking through like the most recent one, I guess Shootout at My Crib is certainly one that feels like, and yeah, okay, Head Taps. Those are like song titles that like speak to, I think, particularly drill subject matter, which is, I think maybe the best example was records like Should Have Ducked and When We Shoot, which are just like, there's just a kind of brutal, like, lack of, what do you call it, mediation. It is poetic, but it's like poetic in a way that's sort of anti-poetic. I remember Wet Moser wrote this about Keith at one point, is it's like, in its like minimalism, it ends up creating this sort of, it's almost a more brutal theater. And I think that's an aesthetic choice that the rappers are like consciously making that connects sort of the aesthetic and the politics.
Let's listen to one of those. one of the non-hit ones off this album.
Head Taps, I guess.
Yeah, Head Taps. Let's do a little bit of Head Taps. Okay.
That's what I just came up with today, look. I go by the mood. You know what I'm saying? My mood gotta be the... Like, if my brother's in the studio and they not in their head, I erased it. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm talking about them, so they gotta feel it. You know what I'm saying? If I'm talking about you and you feel it...
This is also the same Lil Durk who has a record with Morgan Wallen. you know, Broadway Girls was a quasi-hit late 2021, early 2022. Let's listen to a tiny bit of the Durk verse on Broadway Girls.
The part about pink, I hope.
Yes, obvi, depending on which website you read in 2009, I guess, when obs versus obvi. A shout out to Elizabeth Spiridakis.
They tell just tell me don't trust Broadway Girls are trap. They on me, they tryna finesse me. They see me with Morgan and know that I rap. My horse is Porsche, turning me on. I jump on a horse, she get on the back. I went to the bar to go buy a drink. She listen to Pink, she told me she not in the rap. I can't run out of money. The trenches love me forever. They treat me like Ed in London. Take her to pool.
I remember being struck by Broadway Girls. I think as a song, it's good, but also there is a little bit of this topical versatility that he's starting to display. But when I was going back through Durk's catalog in prepping for this episode, I was struck by how little variation there was album to album, whether it's Signed to the Streets, 300 Days, 300 Nights, Remember My Name. We're doing, I don't want to say the same thing. I mean, you know, Pusha T's doing the same thing every album. People seem to love it. It is what it is. But efforts to kind of reach beyond that thematic subject matter and also the sonic palette. To me, I see more evolution in the sonic palette than in the subject matter. Do you feel, David, like for an artist like Durk to be playing at the level that he's playing, that's the safest way for him to do it, by to be a little flexible with production, but to kind of keep subject matter relatively on brand?
Honestly, I think really what it's, to me, it's similar to like Youngboy. Like, I feel like he essentially is rising to fill the space that streaming requires of you. That if you're going to be the dominant artist in this time, you're essentially a streaming artist. And that means a lot of iterations of a similar
fill
style.
Them all.
Yeah. I was saying that like earlier, I was like mentioning in relation to Keith, who I saw as much more versatile. I think streaming punishes versatility, and that artists like Keith who had that kind of like, every time they're trying to sort of try something different, struggle in this era to have the same level of like click-throughs on Spotify, you know?
I think about this a lot with someone like, I remember I wrote something about like Post Malone and early Ray Shremmerd, where I was kind of like, it's all just one long song. There are 18 songs on the album, but it's really one song. It's designed for you to not fast forward. It's designed for you to just kind of like press play, get lost in the hypnosis of it, and never ever click away from it. And I do feel like these Durk albums function similarly.
It's interesting to compare Durk and G Herbo to me, because G Herbo's the guy that like inspired this whole New York sort of branch of drill, right? But why isn't G Herbo as big as Lil Durk? And I think there's a million reasons, but I do think that being a melodic rapper is obviously much closer to what people, if you're trying to cross over, if you're trying to reach the level of success that Durk has, especially in, as I described, the middle of the country, I feel like when I think of what drill is, to me, it has a, if you think of drill as being basically just a new iteration of gangster rap, then Durk is absolutely drill. And if you think of drill as being this sort of production style, then sure, he's not. But I think that it has more to do with the rapping styles. G Herbo obviously doesn't do it very much melodic anything.
It's been interesting to see the industry sort of move towards Durk, right? Like, we've glossed over it a little bit, but he's had this very long arc, but only now is he like megastar famous, right? Like, I think there was probably a big chunk in the middle there where it seemed like he wasn't going to be the sort of headline rapper that he is.
Yeah,
now.
It was plateau, like the kind of like mid to late 2010s, really up until the Drake record.
I mean, he got dropped by Def Jam.
And he sort of made it, you know, for a variety of reasons, as you're saying. But I think one of them is that he sort of, well, you know, he moved to Atlanta, right? And he sort of fit in with that new mold of sort of Southern pain rap, whether you want to talk about Youngboy or you want to talk about Lil Baby or Thug or whatever. Dirk is like a soulful storyteller in a lot of these songs. And I think that when people say Dirk is not drill, what they mean is he's lyrical, right? Like he's not even doing the poetry through negative space that Keith was doing a lot, especially early on. And that I think a lot of people still tie to drill. And it's interesting when we get to the Fiveo thing, I think he's played both sides of that, right? Like he's on this new album, for better or worse, he is telling some soulful stories in these verses, which you don't always imagine as a facet of drill music. Whereas he's also done the sort of, I'm just going to do shoot 'em up noises and ad libs, right? And I think that there's like an in-between space, but I think you're right that the sort of melodic pain storytelling, very memoiristic stuff that you get, especially on the new Dirk album, but that he's been doing all along, that is really in currency now.
I feel like when I was listening back to all these records, where I'm really hearing the heavy shift towards melody is Signs of the Streets, Signs of the Streets 2, and then Remember My Name. And this is also when Quavo is popping up on a song, or rather Fulmigos are popping up on a song. There is a Logic song that we will not speak about. There's the quote unquote hit with Jeremih. There are these kind of moments where it seems like he's, Joe, to your point, sensing what's happening around him in the South and leaning into that a little bit more and removing some of the brittleness of the early tapes. And I think it's that adaptability that does give him the foundation to still be someone that we're talking about 10 years after his first tape.
And at the same time, I think the, you know, more popular at the moment idea of drill that has moved through all these cities, right, from Chicago to London to Paris, Sweden, whatever, et cetera, is like a much more linear, sort of simplified version of what drill sounds like, both in the rhythmic sense and in the lyrical sense, which is basically just the idea that even for European kids who don't have access to guns that Americans do, it's still going to be, you know, shoot, shoot, kill in every song without the sort of depth of a storyteller like a Lil Durk or the newer version of Fiveo.
Okay, I'm glad that you are like juxtaposing these two ideas, because there's a quote in your Fiveo story that really stuck with me. And I think about it. I've thought about it multiple times since reading the piece, which is when he's talking about the more storytelling, poetic writing that he's doing, saying, he said, I didn't know people wanted that from me. And I thought it was just a very interesting idea of like water finding its level, filling up a gas, filling up a container that you provide it. And if you provide it a tiny container, it will fill up a tiny container. But if you give it a huge container, it will also fill the huge container. And Fiveo, being someone who watched Pop Smoke, started making records around the same time, Big Drip is a hit, and it's a very kind of like, I don't want to say entry level, but it's a raw record. It's an extremely raw record. And then he starts moving in this direction, obviously gets picked up by Kanye along the way and is writing for the Donda Sessions. But there's also that song Storytime that was a single like a year ago or whatever, which it felt like a Nas record, you know, it's just very striking. Let's listen actually to a tiny bit of Big Drip and then a tiny bit of Storytime, just to hear the juxtaposition between those two versions of Fiveo.
Straightforward, I don't need a line. I don't. I just wanna watch it the free time. I did. I bought it with me, I ain't leaving my bow. Bow. I bought it with me, I ain't leaving my shoot it with me. I give a fuck if you coolin' with me. You say you ain't GDK. What? What the fuck is you doing with me? Hold on. Yeezys, I need the money and pee. Let me tell a little sad story about this young boy who grew up, no pops in the crib. That mama working so she couldn't really show no love when he was a kid. He ain't even mean to do that incident. He was only 18 when he caught that bit. He ain't out of jail, he ain't out of move, he ain't out of fight, he ain't out of live. He walk in the spot. They told him strip, cork, squat. The CEO just told him that this was procedure, but he knew in his mind he was doing a lot. He had to figure it out and then learn the rules and then follow him like it or not.
I'm Wesley Morris. I'm a culture writer at the New York Times, where I co-host a podcast called Still Processing. Normally, I do this work with the incomparable Jenna Wortham, but this season, Jenna is off writing a book. So I invited some of my favorite writers and critics to come talk to me about the culture that shaped us, the changing ways we consume it, and why Keanu Reeves is basically a culture unto himself. You can listen to Still Processing wherever you get your podcasts.
By the time you get to the 5EO album, which I don't think we have said, but is called Bible, correct?
B-I-B-L-E.
Yeah, what does it stand for?
Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth.
Yeah, there you go. But I think you can fill in your
read
own.
That.
You can play,
yes.
You can play Wordle with Bible and make it mean whatever you'd like.
I don't actually know if that's what it is. That's what the Jizza song stood for. Okay.
So by the time you get to Bible, he's leaning more in the story time direction than in the Big Drip direction. But also, then you have a record like City of Gods, which is just like this. I hate it. Like, I just hate, you know, it's like a lesser Empire State of Mind, which is already among my least favorite Jay-Z records. And it is the definition of a major label idea of what do we do with this guy? We're going to get him in Alicia Keys' hook. It doesn't play to his strengths. It's not a great standalone song. It feels like a compromise in every sense. And not that I need an album full of Big Drips, but I think the reason that the early Pop Smoke long players worked is because they hewed very closely to the street records. They hewed close to Welcome to the Party and so on and so forth. The latter posthumous Pop Smoke albums are less successful because they are a much more hybridized, dare I say.
Though, I think what we've seen is that the latter Pop Smoke albums, two posthumous Pop Smoke albums, are extremely successful, especially the first one. And I think what you're seeing now in 5EO's career is taking a blueprint, not from what Pop Smoke was doing while he was alive, but from posthumous Pop Smoke. It's taking the first Pop Smoke album and saying, this is where drill was going, so let's continue that. So, I mean, I want to talk about this on a few levels, but for 5EO specifically, like the thing that really broke him open for me, you know, I've always been mixed on him. I did an early Diary of a Song with him in 2020 about Big Drip to talk about the way that the city was trying to continue what Pop Smoke had started amid his death, right? His records became protest songs in the summer of 2020. New York drill was just a big question mark at that point. And then fast forward 2 years, 5EO still hasn't released a debut album. And I don't even know if I like him anymore as a rapper. But the thing that really broke him open for me is there's an early story in Complex that I think past podcast guest Ben Dandridge Lemko wrote about five around that same time. And it links to his very old YouTube channel called Light 5EO, which is just super lo-fi, like maybe recorded on like a photo booth, a very early video software on a computer, like not professional at all. And it's just him freestyling over popular songs from 2011, 2012, right? Like this is a guy who's just trying on any style. And I think like on a broader level, like there are rappers for whom rapping is a job. And I think that 5EO sees this more as a job than as an art form. I think it's both. And I think he is obviously creative and charismatic and has qualities of an artist. But I think, and he said to me flat out, like, people think I'm thinking about my album. What I'm thinking about is like wealth. And I think like that is a form of rapper, this sort of workhorse rapper who's willing to try on whatever style is working best. And I think when he says, I was giving people what they want, and there's a line in the intro to the album where he says, like, I got rich off of saying A, meaning like all people wanted to hear from me at first was ad-libs. And so I'm just going to give them songs about shooting that are largely ad-libs and not lyrical. But the fact that he'd already been through various other styles, like he could rap lyrically, right? And he's a weather vane. Like he's licking his finger, putting it up to the wind and saying, what do people want from me? Which is the total inverse of someone like Keith, right? Who said, what do people want from me? Screw that. I'm going to give them whatever I want from my soul. And I think 5EO is a much different type of artist in that, like you said, he's trying to succeed commercially as much as he's trying to succeed artistically. And I think it's okay to be honest about that.
What's interesting about that, and this is like when I'm holding the 5EO album and the Dirk album side by side, the 5EO album is the iterative one. It is the one that suggests new sonic possibility, new ambition, etc. To my ear, it's a more forward-looking record, but I don't mean that in a value positive way. It's just in terms of scale, in terms of ambition, and in terms of, damn, let's just try this. Let's try to make big drill. Let's try to make arena drill. Let's move in that direction. Whereas Dirk, even at the peak of his success, which I think we're at right now, the peak of his like renown and success.
I mean, we literally saw Dirk in an arena. We saw Dirk fill an arena with Baby not 3 months ago.
David, do you think that in a sense, not being bound to Chicago tradition unleashes some of these artists from conceptions of what drill should sound like?
I don't actually think there are too many like Chicago drill traditionalists, unless I'm missing something. Like,
in the sense that Dirk, it feels like he's been doing versions of what he's been doing since 2013 or 2014. Not a traditionalist in the sense that he's trying to remake Bang, you know?
I almost feel like he's doing what most like streaming era artists that are, it's almost like you're scaling up your niche more than you are like trying to cross over. So like, that's what I compared it to Youngboy or like, I don't know, any of the, Rod Wave is maybe a smaller scale version. I don't think Rod Wave is as big as Dirk or Youngboy, but he's a tier or two down below that. But like doing something similar where it's, I just think that's, it's more like fitting the streaming service thing. But the other thing I'd say is that just that there are Chicago drill artists who have been large art, like successful artists with big street records, like outside of Chicago. This whole time, like the whole time that New York drill and all these other things are happening, like FBG Duck had to hit record, but also like Polo G is like still massive. And he started out sounding like G Herbo, but then started doing melodics and it took him, like melodic songs took him to the next level.
It's been interesting to see Dirk do a little bit of both, which is basically just scaling up his niche in the sort of streaming playbook way that you're talking about, but then also doing a Broadway Girls, also doing a Laugh Now, Cry Later with Drake. And I think those things did give his like baseline level a boost, right? If you want to think of it as like monthly users on Spotify or whatever, monthly listeners, like I haven't seen the graph, but you can imagine that the floor for all of his projects is increasing every time he does one of these sort of like old school crossover gestures. Whereas Fiveo has since come out and just done a full, like I've said this in my piece, like a throwback major label debut, which is like packed with features, packed with big obvious samples, records that sound big, Alicia Keys chorus, Quavo on back-to-back songs, like
Destiny's Child sample.
Yeah, and like to its detriment, I think, because I think there's a good, purer version of this album buried within this sort of bloated version that we got.
I found myself more charmed by the Fiveo record like the fourth time I listened to it. I think the first couple times I listened to it, I was kind of like, deep sigh. You know, just like every move, every gesture is telegraphed before it happens. You're just like, okay, this is going to be this kind of record. This is a major label version of a sample drill record. Here is another major label version of a sample drill record that doesn't have any of the raspy charm of actual sample drill. You know, doesn't have the charm of the B-Love record. But then I felt like maybe, I don't know, maybe I got weak at a certain point. But after a few listens, I was kind of like, yeah, this is like a truth, like a post 50 Cent major label street rapper goes mainstream. The problem is with
it's almost quaint.
But it's happening so fast with him. I don't even know what style. I know what styles he's, but it's not commonly known what style he's rejecting in order to take on this style. He's just very simply chameleonic and taking on this style.
And the other funny part is it's not necessarily working, right? Like, he's not a huge artist. This album didn't debut. Like, this little Dirk album,
you have to be big to cross over. Like, to cross over, you have to have momentum. You have to already be heading that direction.
It's like, you know, like, Lil Dirk is way, way more popular, than Fiveo Foreign, right?
Way
and it's this funny thing where you're trying to get to step 10 before doing steps like 4 through 9, like maybe you did steps 1, 2, 3, but I'm interested, like David, like what do you think of 504 flat out?
I honestly don't listen.
I feel
to
like
it
you've been
David's gonna be like, I don't, next question.
I don't think of you at all. That's your takeaway.
the John Hamm meme.
Yeah, exactly. Is that where you stand? Is this just not even, you don't even feel like this is in conversation with the music that you love and covered enough that you have to pay attention to it?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, and that's kind of dismissive, but I feel like overwhelmed by the amount of music that there is. So it's really dismissive in a time management way, genuinely not like I heard it and I was like, this is awful, but in a like, it's not where my interests would be at this point.
But was that true in 2018 as well? Was that true of Big Drip, or is that more reflective of the current moment?
I would say that Fivio was never someone that super attracted my attention. Pop Smoke I like, but like the other thing about it to me too, I mean, there is this other big difference between Dirk and Fivio. Dirk has like a persona and maybe this is true for some people in New York too, I don't know, but I feel like Dirk's like status as a kind of legend and as a auteur and all that kind of street auteur, all that kind of stuff, like there's just this longevity and this attachment people have to who he is and his story and all these things that have been building for so long that, like, in addition to the consistency, the fact that he has churned out so much music on a scale of people like Gunna, and those are the guys I feel like that are super competitive in that kind of space. I'm a fan of Dirk, but I don't listen to him now as much as I did when he was first coming up, for the reason that, like, there's certain records of his that are new that I love. I thought When We Shoot is a crazy song. That's one of my favorite records of the past few years. But, like, I don't know, the way that the streaming economy works makes it hard to be a fan of artists who are producing so much content. I feel like people, when they put on Gunna, it's almost like you're putting on, like, when you're looking for a certain strand of weed, you're like, I would like to, like, just listen to Gunna right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's vibes.
I need to feel a little relaxed.
I would not know. I would not have that experience. I don't know anything about that. But it's interesting to talk about Dirk in the context of the streaming ecosystem. Like, to me, one of the weaker entries in the Dirk catalog is actually the collaborative album with Lil Baby called The Voice of the Heroes, which does feel like, how can we get two great streaming tastes to taste great together? And it doesn't feel particularly natural to me. I will say that the more natural collaboration was, I think, from before that, which is called Finesse Out the Gangway. Another reason I like that song is because the video was filmed at Icebox, my good friends at Icebox. Let's actually listen to a little bit of Finesse Out the Gangway. This is a Lil Durk with Lil Baby.
I came from nothing, I had to go get it. I had to finesse out the gangway. I done did everything for the that I love who stuck in the chain gang. Be so weird, I'm steady watching all the who yelling out gang gang. Be so different, I'm watching the be yelling out bang bang. Roll up a blunt of that Pluto, used to be D, now I'm running around Uno. I know some who hustling but quick because they was doing it for two.
Before we kind of like wrap it up, I do want to jump into the Bronx drill at the moment and sample drill. Have either of you ever listened to Punk Goes Drill from a couple years ago?
Oh, yeah. Which is not punk or drill.
And yet, maybe both.
I'm gonna stick with it's neither punk nor drill. It's like noise music sampling like Nickelback and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Fine,
it's like
which whatever. But the way in which it is sampled is a punk. It's methodologically punk, I think. It is not taxonomically punk.
You think it presages sample drill by chopping up? Sorry, I said Nickelback, but I meant Snow Patrol. So, you know, everybody's favorite punk band, Snow Patrol.
Yes, I do think it sets the template, certainly for the K-Flock and B-Love hits from last year. Let's listen to B-Love's My Everything. It flips the Mary J. Blige song. Let's listen to B-Love.
She acting older, she want me to spank it. Bad little best, not basic. Gave my time, you better not waste it. We get to have no way in, like, we just going up a rotation. Feel like we're cause the way that I aim it. Like, in a way, could go when them bullets all rain. Like, no, I ain't mad, that ain't my whole life. He think he is, but he not, though. She let me hit in the Tahoe. Made any passion for iPhone.
So yeah, I do think that sets the table a little bit for what we've been hearing in the Bronx for the last 6 to 12 months. But also, I think what's funny, and when you hear it in the context of the Fivio record, you're like, this isn't very radical at all. This is just sampling obvious songs. This is Puffy. Like, this is just like the most obvious big, you know, take hits from the 80s. Yeah, yeah. Do it sound so crazy? Yeah, yeah. Except instead of the 80s, it's 2012 or 2013. And so I'm actually weirdly surprised that there haven't been more folks coming out of that scene who have done bigger radio, bigger records that are bigger successes at radio than the ones that have already been out there. David, do you pay attention to any of the Bronx sample drill stuff?
Yeah, I've been keeping up. I also like a lot of this stuff that was coming out of Queens a little before it that was doing like those guys, it was like Yellow Tape or whatever. There's another crew that was doing some cool sample flip stuff. I've kept up with it. There was like this TikTok that was like this older guy was like listening to his little brother's music or whatever. And he's like, yeah, this is that. And then the beat starts and he's like talking about shooting somebody in the face. And the older brother is suddenly like, what the fuck is this? That's how I feel with a lot of this stuff, honestly, is like, I love the sample. And then the execution. The execution is really like it lives or dies by like how much it adds to it for me, I guess.
There's also, Joe, in your story, isn't the Five-Yo thing where Beyonce made him rewrite his verse or something in order to get clearance for the sample? Is that
that's your story? Yeah. I mean, we should listen to a little bit of What's My Name from the Five-Yo album, which has two more features than necessary, I think, but is an interesting version of trying to scale up this idea of sample drill, that has come out of Queens and the Bronx.
Partition come ride with the boss in the backseat. A lot on my mind, I don't wanna think. She come relax me. Diving at the water, breaststroke. Tell me your thoughts, peep show. Knowing the mission, don't stop.
Respectfully,
told she better. Say my name.
He did tell me and others, I think, on this press tour about trying to clear the Destiny's Child sample, having to get Beyonce's personal stamp of approval on it. And it's a sex song, right? It's a sex drill song, which is also a burgeoning subgenre within a subgenre. But she thought it was just a tad too far on the explicit misogyny scale. So he had to scale it back a little bit, though he did note that she loved specifically in the chorus where he ad-libs behind a dirty line and says, respectfully.
Hashtag respectfully. Shout out Justin LaBoy. Joe, that story is funny for a few reasons, but it's also funny because at least me, I'm the oldest person on this damn show. I remember when you'd have to get that kind of approval from Air Supply or Sting or whoever. And now it's Beyonce being the person like, actually, you should clean it up a little bit. You should tighten it up. And it's just amusing. It's amusing how history is collapsing upon itself.
I want to do one brief detour before we get really into the future of drill, which is about the pronunciation of Five-Yo. So simultaneous, right after David, I noticed you were doing a more traditional pronunciation, which you were saying Five-Yo,
Five-Yo,
and people have definitely called him that, and I think it's Five-Yo, but there's a Five-Yo piece in the New Yorker, so shout out to Kay for
hi Kay
doing a great piece on this. But his explanation is that the name, I'm quoting, derives from an old nickname, Fabio, bestowed by a friend who noticed that women found him charming, so it is pronounced Five-Yo. Though people who know him tend to drop the last letter or two. I'm going to go ahead and say from spending time with them, you know, New York accents are what they are. But I think at this point they've just landed on five. Pronouncing it like Five-Yo, even if that's the origin story. But the New Yorker has fact checkers and I don't.
If you are the New Yorker fact checker who called Five-Yo to ask him specifically about this fact in Kay's story, please DM us or email us at podcastnytimes.com. We support New Yorker fact checking. We're grateful for
it. But I want to see the backup.
I'd like to, I'd be curious even, and I will say that even though many years ago, I believe there was a story, maybe it was the Jay-Z story that Kay did 100 years ago, where they said that Raucous was like a division of Def Jam. And I was like, okay, the fact checkers fell asleep on this one. However, generally speaking, we support New Yorker fact checking. We'll take out a billboard and say how much we support New Yorker fact checking. Anyway, thank you. Anyway. Thank you, Joe, for tying that together.
Had to touch on, and the last thing, the reason I wanted to make this point is I think, as we've seen over the years with other artists like Six Lack, aka Black, if people don't know how to say your name, you're not a star. And that's like a hard thing to get over. And eventually people just have to land somewhere. And whether they land where you want them to or not, you just got to roll with it.
That is ruthless and cruel. And I am accepting it. And we're going to move on. We should obviously close out with a person who is doing the opposite for drill that Five-Yo is doing. And that person is, of course, drill auteur Cardi B. Cardi is on a record with K-Flock, who is currently in jail. The record is called Shake It. Let's listen to a little bit of the Cardi verse of Shake It. Actually, probably the whole Cardi verse because it's not very long.
You on hot, bitch, I'm on hot too. I pull up to your window like drop through. Come get shot with bullets, no bridle. Put a tag in your head, I could buy you. Like, huh? Like, what? None of these bitches is tough. I'm with this shit and it give me a rush. Shorty be looking, think she got a crush. I'm not a step up, bitch, I'm a stopper. All of my eyes get mixed with a robber. Bro, said she was gonna touch me. She lying, Kuna Matata.
I was trying to think of if any other major New York rapper of the moment, and Cardi B very much is a New York rapper, could so seamlessly deliver a credible Bronx drill flow verse on a credible Bronx drill production. The answer is I don't think so. And what I'm really grateful for on this record is Cardi basically saying, don't bring the style to me. Let me come to the style. And Cardi is a chameleonic rapper herself, not dissimilar to Fiveo in that way, in the sense that her flows, going back to Bodak Yellow, are often indebted to other flows from all over the country. So why couldn't she also be able to pull off a Bronx drill flow? I don't know if this is the crossover slash breakout moment for authentic New York drill in a Billboard context. I think that song debuted at number 51 on the Hot 100, which is fine, but not very high. But Joe, do you think it portends more attention being paid to this sonic palette and then other folks maybe trying to do the opposite of what Fiveo is doing, not saying I'm going to take a little bit of drill and turn it into a 2004 Ja Rule record, but actually being like, how can I actually make a slightly amplified version of what's happening truly with current drill producers?
I mean, this just feels like a really one of one situation, right? Like you have...
I don't think so, but okay.
Okay, like, well, I'll make my point and then you can refute it, but I'm interested in David's take as well. But okay, so you have K-Flock, he's signed to a major label. He's supposed to be a breakout star of Bronx drill, and then he gets arrested for killing a man in broad daylight, allegedly. So that's a crazy start to the story, right? He has a few records seemingly in progress. One of them is based around this sample of Akon song Bonanza, aka Belly Dancer. It's a little bit sample drill. It's a little bit like the most controversial sort of Clutch Your Pearls, what am I listening to story in terms of its real life crossover. And then you have Cardi B, who, as you said, is maybe the only person who could jump on a record like this and both elevate it and not ruin it. I was trying to think of the most recent example of something like this, and like the only example I could come up with is like Drake hopping on the Block Boy JB song and like doing like a passable like Memphis shout out, like an artist, an A plus list artist going all the way down into the mud with something that they legitimately care about and maybe even come from a little bit historically,
but also want to use their leverage. They want to leverage their own clout, fame, and authority to amplify this thing that otherwise would not be amplified.
And then I've already been shot down by you and others by saying this is the finest performance of Cardi B's entire career, but I stand by it. So this is what, four rappers on this song in a minute 59 or whatever. Like, you know, this is just like perfectly, and this is a perfectly engineered record with a perfectly engineered rollout. You have the Side Talk video serving as like a snippet, a teaser.
Shout out Trent. Shout out Jack.
It was already a viral snippet just because of the beat for the original K-Flock version. Like, it's a supernova that I agree could burn out before it gets anywhere because it's so crazy and like it's so fast. The verses are short, but they're also rapping very quickly. Like, I don't know how far it goes, but I don't think it's replicable.
Okay, that's interesting. I also, just as a sidebar, I think Dougie B is maybe the one who's going to benefit the most from this. I think it's like the crispest of the verses. That's not Cardi, three other rappers. It's the crispest. And also, I think it seems to show a tiny bit of ambition for a flow pattern that's a little bit bigger than the current traditional Bronx drill flow patterns. David, when you hear Shake It, and more to the point, an artist like Cardi, who's well known, coming back to rap on a record like this, like, is this kind of like Kanye and Pusha on the Don't Like remix kind of? Woo! Let's listen to that. Wait, I haven't thought about that in ages. Let's listen to Pusha T on the Don't Like remix from 77 years ago.
Fraud niggas, y'all niggas, that's that shit I don't like. Yo, this shit make believe, rapping about my own life. Woo! That's Rand, nigga. Woo! Ric Flair, nigga. Woo! The power's in my hand, nigga. Woo! I get it beat the chair, nigga. Soho, a Tribeca, three ho, trifecta.
I actually probably like this more, but almost as a... I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the Don't Like remix.
I wouldn't imagine that you were.
I think actually we should do a whole episode on your thing about the engineer messing up the click track on that, because that's a great story that is quite deep in the weeds and we'll save for another time. Yeah. But check out David Drake's Twitter feed if you want to find a story about the Chief Keef verse being laid wrong on the Don't Like remix.
I was like definitely thinking about saying that, but then I was like, no, I should focus on this. I think that the Cardi
B... That's
okay.
So totally okay. It's a, you know, podcasts, we are in a boundless medium.
There's a video from a guy who seems a little smug that's on YouTube and has been around since 2012 when he was sent to go record Chief Keef's new verse for the remix. You can tell he's not enjoying himself, doesn't want to be there, and clearly does not respect Chief Keef. The video ends with him playing I Gave You Power by Nas in the car on the way back, as if to show his...
Truly the best detail. I watched it the last time you posted it and really enjoyed the surprise ending.
I think it was D Gaines who pointed out to me, D Gaines, the videographer who did the original Don't Like video. However, I'm not 100% sure it was him, which is good because I don't want him to get in trouble if this comes back to him somehow. But I feel like it was he that pointed out to me that if you listen to how Keef's vocals land on the beat, they land very squarely compared to on the original. As if the, you know, people would complain about Keef being off beat, which of course was like a purposeful swing, I think, that he was doing, or at the very least a, you know, he was intentionally f-ing with your idea of whether or not he should be on beat. They landed it so squarely on beat, it kind of, when you listen to his verse on it, it sounds very like stiff in a way that none of his other verses from that year. And D Gaines was saying that he thought that they just didn't know where to lay his vocals on the track. And so they did it like off by a half beat or something, which when I listen to it makes sense to me. Like I hear that as well.
David, hopefully when this episode comes out, feel free to retweet it with the link to that video. Fair?
Absolutely.
Fair trade?
Yes. Okay.
So then tell me about what you think the differences are between the Don't Like remix and Cardi on Shake It.
My honest feeling is that Kanye tried to make something fancy that, and I get what he was trying to do in the moment, because I Don't Like in its form pre-streaming would not have been a hit record in the way that it was with a remix. But in the streaming era, I think Don't would have just been a clear hit.
Yes, totally.
On its own.
Totally, totally.
And so he tried to sort of like, it's got these weird like stomping parts, and it has like this sort of dance hall, like a Barrington Levy thing going on in the background, like these vocal O's. And it just feels very like he was dressing it up in a lot of stuff. And it, to me, it's a little top heavy. I don't know. It's not, it didn't really get the spirit of what the original song was going for. Whereas this thing,
no, the
Don't
Remix feels like a, forgive me for saying this, the Don't Like Remix just feels like a regular rap song. Whereas Don't Like, I don't like, you know, that does not feel like a regular rap song at all. But it is homogenized, and maybe because of this gentleman and his YouTube video and his his quantizing or whatever. Anyway, but tell me about Shake It and Cardi.
Well, so Shake It and Cardi, I think it's cool that Cardi has always like sort of paid homage to drill music in general. Even after she dropped this, she was like, actually, the first time I was on a drill beat was, and she shared her remix to B.O.N., which is a King Louis song that she did 7 years ago or 6 years ago or something. And I think that she is one of those like rare crossover stars who can like fit in on sort of street records and make it work. I'm not saying she always does, but in this particular case, I feel like it kind of works. And her appearance actually elevates the song and giving you something to grab onto in a way that like, I'm not sure K-Flock has, he's definitely doing like a unique thing, but I don't know if he's gotten to that point yet. I wouldn't say that it's a great song to me. It's more like a really cool, like in the way that like I would enjoy a radio freestyle back in the day or something like that.
Or R.I.P. K-Slay. It's a K-Slay record. That's how it feels like to me. It's a K-Slay record, but I'm glad it exists. And I also am glad that a person like Cardi is still viable in the sense that she can do incredibly mainstream crossover records, but still wants to do street and street aware records like this. I don't think like Rocky could pull this off to the degree that Rocky's a New York rapper, quote unquote. I don't think that Nicki could exactly pull this off, but I think Cardi has like a malleability that really allows for that.
I mean, two people you just named who have recently tried to do drill records with 5EO Foreign, Rocky and Nicki. And I think that you're right. They're both less successful than this, but it is interesting to continue to watch people trying on this style, right? In the same way, you know, to bring it full circle, like that we saw happen with trap music to its great dilution in terms of making it to an Ariana Grande number one single, whatever, if you think that's like a logical endpoint for the sound. But, you know, Nicki did her drill record with 5EO. City Girls did their drill record with 5EO. You know, it's just very much like people are going to continue trying this on, whether or not they will have the essence in the from the original G Herbo and Dirk and Keef stuff, probably not. Whether they will even have the essence of the Pop Smoke stuff, I don't know.
What I was to say is the people on the 5EO record who I think actually show up the best are Lil TJ, who actually I don't think of as someone who's versatile, generally speaking, but who I think does a pretty good job on this record, and also Blueface,
who does his best Draco the Ruler impression.
Exactly, but Blueface's natural flow, and you can argue from where Blueface took that flow, it's not that dissimilar from a kind of classic drill flow, like a New York drill flow. It's actually not that different. And so I think it actually jibes pretty well. And also, Joe, what you were saying reminds me of this very funny tweet that was going around the other day, which is, I think it was Calvin Harris was like, Funk Wave Bounce 2 is coming. And then someone retweeted it, quote tweeted it with, oh, great, now we're getting 5EO Foreign and Olivia Rodrigo on a record together.
I think that's definitely going to happen. Like Calvin Harris is definitely going to make a sample drill song with chopped up Olivia on the hook.
Oh, my God. Whoever tweeted that, tremendous act of music criticism. Salute to that person. I can't remember who did it, but salute to that person. Really brought me a lot of happiness. David, let's send it out. A Dirk song. You want like a slept on Dirk song? Something, a mid-career sleeper that we're not thinking about? What should we go out listening to?
That's a good idea.
That's what we're here for.
Putting me on the spot here.
You could take a minute.
I mean, I'm going to just say this isn't really mid. This is sort of in his comebacks, but I think that When We Shoot, one of his best songs from like the later era, just a really dark record. And I actually wanted to say too, we haven't talked much about the violence except to talk about the ways in which it was exploited or whatever. I was listening to a podcast about Buddhism recently. The guy on it talks about how there's a shrine in Japan where over the entrance of the door, they say, do not enter unless you, I'm misquoting it, but it takes seriously life and death. I kind of wanted to go out on that note. When we talk about drill music, I feel like a big problem with a lot of how it was covered was people just didn't take what people are talking about in it seriously. And I felt like before suggesting we play a song called When We Shoot, I should probably say something.
It's important to remember in this real life situations, real life, actual traumas. And I do think that those traumas are often leveraged for political advantage by folks who do not genuinely care about the traumas themselves. And it could be actually political advantage. It could be for critical or journalistic sensation. But all that serves to do is add additional layers of distance away from the kind of originating traumas. I think that point's very real.
And the New Yorker, the last thing I'll add is that New Yorker piece by Khalif Hosanna about 5EO and drill had a great line to that effect also, where he said, perhaps it is possible to hear drill music as proof of the stubborn persistence, not just of violence, but of poetry too.
Real talk. That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Subscribe to a podcast anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Google, Apple, Stitcher, yada, yada, yada. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Get in the Discord. Thank you to Joe. Thank you to David. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We'll be back next week. Here's a little Dirk, When We Shoot.
I be with dogs and I be comfortable around them gangsters. I get him with 30, he pop out the car, he getting too anxious. Don't give him no ax when he got his back, it's way too dangerous. And you can't run when we shoot.
You can't run when we shoot. You can't run when we shoot. And you can't run when we shoot.